Mr. Maven, reel 13. So how long was the train journey up from Pusan?
Well, I can't write the same. As I say, it was a long time, and it wasn't just single hours. It was dual hours, like 10, 12. The trains, well, you've got to think, there was no really good railway system. And it's very hilly, as I've explained, and the trains didn't go through hills or mountains, they just went down them. Well, it made a 5 mile journey 4 times longer by the time it went round. It didn't cut across the many valleys, it just followed the contours of the land. So consequently, the trains wending its way around, it was dead slope, stopped for no apparent reason. And we were all, there was the DLI draft, there was Black Watch, Americans. It was just a troop train made up of units going up to the front.
So there were American drafts as well on the train?
Well, it was a train going up there, you know.
Had they joined at Pusan?
On the train. You think they wouldn't possibly, we don't know what the army thinks. There might have been plenty of Commonwealth troops going up to fill the train. So we might have made a few trains. They wouldn't make use of it, and they just used it because the roads were terrible. Camp transport was terrible. And there was all nationalities on the train. And then we just went on for hours and hours and hours.
So it must have been a fair sized train.
Well, it was well crowded. There was no soft seats or all hard seats. Like during the war in this country, the buses had the utility buses had wooden seats in them. There was no cushions, you know, seats just like that. And surprisingly, many of them were carriage.
So it must have been a very tedious journey.
Oh, it was terrible.
And as you mentioned before, a lot of damage. You noticed a lot of damage.
It was a ruined country by the sense that it was just being fought over 4 times. I mean, Seoul changed hands 4 times, I think. And the war only went from 50 to 53. So in 3 years, armies were up and down that country about twice, and bombing and.
Because this must have been the April 53, round about this time.
Yeah. We're coming out of the winter, you know, and of course also what they said was that there was supposed to be pockets of North Koreans in the hills, not terrorists, you know, partisans, whatever you want to call them.
Was the train guarded then?
Well, I can't remember. I think it must have been. Because you had to, they said, you know, look out for such snipers and stuff like that. They'd see, it started off during the day, it was night time, and we got somewhere, we'd say, never tell anyone which army where you're going, we know we're in Korea, we know we're going up the front, supposedly to join the battalion. And then all of a sudden, at one of the stops, somebody comes down and says, here to when, but I might even get off of here. So I was in, so I got off with all my gear, the train puffed away. I think it was about 20 or 30 years. Standing on this derelict station, blasted, you know, wrecked. Nobody there to see.
Was this just Durham's?
Aye. Just standing there, waiting. What I was eating was mist and damp. And then eventually a wagon rolls up and we get into the wagon and they took us to somewhere in Seoul. It was the brigade headquarters, or what it was, some headquarters, bombed out buildings again.
What was that? Was that a camp?
It wasn't a camp as such. It was an echelon, a bay echelon somewhere. It was. You know, gas and all that, but there was engineers, there was artillery, there was signalers, there was a lot of officers and clerks, and we were just dumped in there.
What was it? Was it a building or a series of buildings?
No, it was a building. It was a wrecked building. Could have been a big house. We came down this splattered road. Then we went up what was possibly could have been a drive to a big, you know, like courtyard and everything, and a big building wall with new tables, you know. Then the fight was out, and we got there, and then I think there was some bait. And then they said, this split us all up, and I eventually found out it was me and about another three that put us in about a 1,500 weight truck. And once again, he took us away. We went over the Han River, I guess the Han River went through, put it through, so it was like the only bridge that was left intact. And we went away.
Is this the same night?
Well, the next day, you know. And we didn't have a clue where we were. We didn't know whether we were on the north side of the river, the south side of the river, or what. And we ended up at this, ruined building. And then we rolled up to this, and there was the old bar across the road, and the lad lifts the bar, and we went away through, we spoke to the driver, went away around through all the ruins, and came up. Right, this is where we are, and we found out that we had a guard this thing. What the hell would guard? I haven't got a clue. But there was two engineers, there was three artillerymen, there was a signaller, there was a KSLI, Lance Jack, and there was a Royal Ulster Rifle Sergeant, and that was the staff. We had a cook. And we were just guarding this.
So what sort of accommodation?
Well, we were in a bombed out building, which had a bit of a roof on, and we had bunk beds down the wall, and we had electricity because there was a generator from there. And the lad said, well, I mean, we just went there and replaced somebody, and they said, don't laugh, they got ready. He did about a 12-hour shift on guard without any break. It was sort of, because if you went on guard, it could be, what the hell you know? We used to go out and there was a lot of Americans around. We found out it was Suwon, a place called Suwon. We knew that. There was a big American airfield not far away. Because we used to hear these bombs and it was big in the soundbite. It was the first time I'd heard the soundbite, but I used to see the jets or something like that. And bang on there. And of course, there was a lot of American troops and everything. But we had to go out to see. And the really, the existing lads, the sergeant, who didn't get too much, was the right big lad. He had a woman in his little quarter. And there was some black market going with a cook. He was hauling food out and getting some stuff in. And we had a Korean guard. We would go down in the morning, 6 o'clock, whoever was on guard. It was just a little old brick building. He was just a little guard. We had the battery, we lifted it back down. And you were there for about, well, it was 6 o'clock at night. And somebody brought some goodies. It wasn't too long to fall off, like it should be. You just did it all day. And then somebody came on and did it all night. But that meant that you had about 2 days off. So you weren't quite, well, no parades, not like that. There was nobody, okay, you were off, you could go and wander around, so on, you could go and visit the American camp.
So there was just this sergeant in charge?
And a Lance Jack.
And how many men?
It was about 6 or 8 of us.
And I think you said about 2 or 3 Durham lads.
Two engineers.
And you never found out what you were guarding?
No.
You were never told?
No. It could have been just like some... Well, it couldn't have been important because... We just packed in and left it. We never took anything out after about a week. It was just packed in. And to this day, I have no clue what we're doing. Some of the lads who had been, they were guarding an ammunition dump in Troy, and other lads were guarding motor transport places, you know, where we're guarding this road place.
And this town, was it far from Seoul?
Still on. It took a tiny bit to get there, but I think maybe it's about 20 miles.
Was it a big place?
But it was all bombed and wrecked, and you know, it was like a cowboy town. There was no tarmac roads. The main road going down was just a gutted road, and the buildings either side were, they've just been removed. They've all been blasted down. And they've just removed what they could. And there was a big American presence.
So what about local inhabitants then?
Oh, they were living round about the camp. They used to fight for the empty tins, you know, beans or corned beef tins. And they used to get them, cut the top and bottom off, and come up the side and flatten them using the tiles for the roof. And then you corrugate the sheet or anything they could use to do the building with, or anything like that. And they were living all around it.
So what did you do to fill your time in?
Well, that was it. I had nothing to do. We just lie on the bed. And then we went round to the Americans from where they were. It was the American police. First off, the sergeant says you have to keep away from the Americans because the last lot of them have been children. Anyway, we went into this camp. People were feeling hungry. And then we went into their mess. You know, and I looked in, and the food and the stuff that they had, and it was like going in a paradise. Got those trays, which was to go all compartments, you know, where you put the table and the stew. The way we used to tell mess tins, well, it was in two mess tins, and they had all these trays. You went along and you just put on what you wanted, and you went down to the tables, the tablecloth on the tables, and that two big cauldrons of coffee, black or white, that sugar and stuff, and on the tables. You just helped yourself, and you went back to set into your plant, and you were in paradise. And then they had a film tour there, they had the film, and we went to see if it was a quiet man. We went and watched that one. And they all thought that was good. They went roping and was like that, and like that, you know, and whoa, this, that, and the other. And then they were asking us if we had any, we wanted our cap badges. You know, because they were great on the cap badges. So, there's a real problem getting cap badges. Then we were all slugged our cap badges. we got cigarettes and all sorts from them. The more you piled on it with your dad's badge and handed on to you and all that, the bigger the cigarettes you got. And we flogged our cap badges. We weren't even bothered with it, like, but never mind. And I looked there for like it was a week or 10 years, and we said it just packed in and went back down to his headquarters place in Seoul. And then we went in there, and then they threw some regimental police armband at us.
Because, of course, you were a draft for the DLI, that's why you'd gone over there, but obviously I gather you hadn't joined the battalion at this time.
Somebody grabbed us. Somebody at this place must have had some pull and said they wanted 20 odd or 30 odds to go with these guards, because maybe it's people from under the mob, whoever had been there. And they wanted to see, so they took us. And so I had about 10 years. And then we're on the guard, and this place had to book all the transport out.
What place was this then, Kev?
It was this place in Seoul where they first took us.
Oh, I guess.
Like the headquarters, you know, I don't know if everybody was the DA headquarters or what, you know. And so there was the barrier. When the barrier was down, we had told by the RSM, right, you want the vehicle registration, the driver's number, his name, time booking out, his destination, and then booking in when he comes back. Right, so the first wagon comes, and he's not going to stop. So he's away, we have no idea who he was. So the next one comes along, we're stopping. We're stopping the drivers. What are you stopping us for? I'm all the rest doing the nut. I've got these ones at a certain time, and say, all your horses. What they call you? Remember, they say, what are you doing? You know, I'll be late to pick up the colonel or something like that. Never mind. And then next thing, there was a tear sheets and wagons waiting to get out, the trouble waiting to get back in. All doing those officers coming down, playing the orders. Our orders are there. We don't know yet. But we only lasted for over a day in the height of the rock class. And then the, where did they send us to? Oh, this laundry. It was this.
Send you to Garda Laundry.
It was a mobile laundry which had been made a permanent fixture once again on derelict land and barbed wire right round. On one side of it was a really workshops and doing repairs. And on the other side there was brothels.
Is this in Seoul?
In Seoul. Now the laundry was operated by Australians. Well, the Australian engineers or what, but they were the maintenance people. It was run by Korean women. They came in, washed those things, and at night they all packed up and went home. They left those daylight up to guard the thing. I suppose they made sure that nobody came to pinch any of the clothing. You know, and that was it. And the first night, this Australian office came down. Of course, we were in the tent. We all jumped up and stood with tents, and we was over the moon with that, because the Australians never give them any respect. And we asked us if we were all right, and said, have you had your beer ration? No. I get the beer ration down the next night, and sure enough, his word, but your last one came down. I think I've got to pay for it. You allowed somebody who got us a beer, and he saw it was a bit, as long as I had the money left. And we were there, but we were there. And there was this Rini depot workshop next to us. Used to see us, their regimental police wandering around, you know, there. Prisoner duties exercise. And this day they come through the barbed wire to us and they said, let us out, Jordy. Aye, right, no. So we let them out and they went into the barbed wire. And they come back and let them in. So a prisoner and escort have been out to exercise.
Prisoner and escort to the brothel.
Aye. And that's good. And then when we found out, we went through there into there to get some food. They had some better food than what we were. And then every now and again, the MPs used to raid these brothels. And the lads used to come running up. That was it. We opened the gate, let them in, shut the gate before the MPs came. They were hiding in the rooms and that. But that only lasted for about a week, and then. Then we were just out again. Took us back to this headquarters place where it seemed to be like a centre pool. And then the RSM decided it would all do. He would drill us all. Had a bit of a, not a square, but you know, some flat land.
Had you had anybody in charge of you while all this was going on?
No. You were just under the guidance of the Australians on the laundry. You see, we came under their jurisdiction, and the officer came down to see if we were all right. So we're getting our beer. We're living off sea pack rations or whatever it was, you know. And none of them were inside. Well, what they say then is the same as soldier, don't they? And if there's no NCO, whoever's the same as soldier, he's in charge. We're all the same draft.
So you're under no sort of formal training?
No parades.
Nothing at all. And what did you think of all this then?
Well, I thought, what the hell is this? And it was like Fred Carnell's army. You had to keep a log. You know, we had to write down who was on guard, you know, 2 to 4. And, you know, you put the names down and you had to do it yourself. Like, you know, nobody. Nobody sort of takes that back and says, like, you know, can you do 2 on 4 off, 2 on 4 off? You know, there was nobody who could turn up on anybody. Hey, you know, you really can't do what you do. But when we were under, got back this like headquarters place, well, you know, was officers and sergeant, and this sergeant major decided to have a drill. So there was all the other people there, heavy infantry, signals and all the rest, and it was just like, that's the order arms, that's the new way we just stood there. Because our drill was entirely different to the heavy infantry drill. We don't order arms, we don't put your arms on the shoe, carry the trail. And so we started shouting and yelling, like, you know, don't do heavy infantry drill. There we were, and then when he had his marching, well, we all set off at 140 minutes, and left all the standards, and he didn't do that very long. You could soon get rid of them. Because, you know, a lot of them there thought that we'd sort of just come out from England, but I mean, we've been swung around in Hong Kong, we've been swung around in Japan, we probably had more time than what some of them had who had been there. And then all of a sudden, right, you're going up to the battalion. And so we just piled into some weapons. And then off we went. We were still didn't know where we were, but we knew we were going to join the battalion. And it happened that the battalion was out on rest. I think you can put the battalion's time and career down into two halves. From, I think it was September or October till just after Christmas, they were in the line. And then I think it was from Christmas to March or April, must be April. The whole Commonwealth Division was out on rest at Camp Casey. And we joined them when we went for the second half into the line. And that we went to go there.
So where did you join the battalion?
Camp Casey.
At Camp Casey itself.
When they were in Colonel Green's lectures, he always split the campaign for the Durham, which was like in two halves. The first half when we got there, which was the winter in that. Then the second half, after they'd been out on rest, I mean, they weren't sitting with a pig up, they were running around doing all sorts, you know. Because then they went in and we had the tail end of the winter, and we had the mosquitoes and that. In the spring and the summer, where the monsoon rains, and all that, and it was like the two halves. And when I joined them, they were just there, it was Camp Casey.
So you actually went into Camp Casey itself? Yeah. What were your impressions of Camp Casey?
Not very nice. I wasn't there very long, though.
Was it a big camp?
It was Camp Casey.
Can you describe it?
Well, not really, because we were just there, we were just being dumped off. And then they said, right, you have to go, go to D Company, and then you don't leave the D Company, you've got to find 10th platoon. I went to 10th platoon, and then I was only there about a day and a half, and then we were away.
How were you received into the battalion?
All right, no problem. You know, you would go in and say, there's a bed there, you know. Take that one. He's just gone home, or whatever. Or he's in Tokyo on leave. We'll be somewhere else by the time he comes back. Then obviously say, what's it like back home? And he said, well, I don't know. It's what you just left, isn't it? He said, oh, I left two. Would that be you? Where the hell you been? Oh, being swung around Hong Kong in Japan and being told in Seoul.
So the lads you were joining had seen action, I suppose, in that first half that you described.
You see, also what happened, a lot of the lads who were had done the first half, they all come home to the movies. You've got to remember that there were, I think it was 70 or 75% of the time was National Service. And so you had 6 weeks out there on the boat, you had 6 weeks to come back. There's 12 weeks of the time taken up travelling. And if you'd already done 6 months or 9 months before they took you out there, and then you'd done another 6 months there, the National Service was starting to change. That's how we were going as replacements. Not for the dead or the wounded, we were going as replacements for National Service.
So when they came to the end of the 2 years, they just left?
Aye, I just came home. What that's it. You had to leave there 3 months, 3.5 months before you do what you want. Because, obviously, you had to go from where you were staying in Seoul. You had to get down to Busan to get a boat. And then the boat would take 6, depending on what speed it did, 6 or 7 weeks to get back home. And then you're entitled to the fortnight's disembarkation leave and all the rest. So the people were leaving there for the mob 4 months before they were due for the mob. So when you reckon up that the organisation that was going to have people, you know, a continual flow, I mean, that just happened to us, it happened to every British unit that was out there, there had to be a flow of national servicemen coming out to really take the place of the one who was going on to be mob. And then there was not a lot, but there was people sent home for the coronation. The RSM, the Black Regulars, he came back for the coronation. John Lightley, he was the lieutenant, he came back. Donald Young, he was his batman, he came back. There was a few went back for the coronation. And there was people who had been wounded, but not seriously, anyway, it's bad, but, and they said, right, we'll not send them back, but we'll keep, because there was DLI people trained us in Japan, you know, we got everything, and so there was a lot of vacancies, shall we say, the battalion was never up to full strength, a lot of vacancies, and of course, I think half the time, the CEO didn't know, like, us 20 yards swanning around the soul. If he'd known that we were there, he'd have had us up straight away. He maybe didn't realise that his clerk was going to say, oh, there's 20 blokes missing here. And then, well, you know, what's happening? And then somebody said, oh, they just totally down for the train. And then, of course, telephone calls were made. And
yeah, I was just wondering what happened to the rest that were left on the train.
They joined the battalion, because we met them when we got the battalion.
The N to Zs. They'd gone straight to the battalion.
They'd gone straight up to Camp Casey, you see, because the battalion was out in rest, so they got off there, and, you know, and maybe he's in talk, and someone said, hey, there's 20, 20 to have a train down there. And, what? Another 20? And that was it. And as I say, I don't know who was in charge, but we just swung around, you know. Some of the lads that, as I say, we've got ammunition dumps, motor transport places, we've just scattered around, you know.
And that was just Durham's who were taken off that train.
At that time, that train coming up might have had Black Watch taken off for, you know.
So the 20, well, however many had come off, eventually got back together and you were shipped up to Camp Casey.
Yeah, and we all met up again. What's it like where you were? I'm sitting off a lot later. I wish they'd still been there. And that was it, like, you know, it was an experience, but there's nobody in charge, because when you get back to town, you come down the ground with a big stunt, like, you know, you've got sergeant majors running after you and shouting and bawling at you, and you can't just please yourself. So it was an exciting, I say, about a month, I think, or 2 weeks or a month. And, just as we were when we left, there was word came round that they were going to start and have parade. Maybe that's why he had us on parade for the coronation. They were going to do a big parade in Seoul, I think, for the coronation, because it was, you know, we were on the line for the coronation.